comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. I'm here because it matters, and so do you. Have you heard the amazing statement that has come out of one of the NASA organizations? You know, the Kepler mission is a mission to find other Earth-like planets. And it's only been, since May or June of 2009, end of May, early June, they launched. And they've already found, they've verified, five exoplanets. Now, the Kepler mission does only one thing. Okay, it only looks for Earth-like planets. Now, it's going to find some that are not Earth-like, but that's what it does. It only looks for exoplanets, and they're really looking for Earth-like planets. And Simon Pete Worden, an astronomer who heads NASA's Ames Research Center, had an amazing statement to the press. Now, what they're predicting is that they will find other Earth-like planets in the next 4 to 5 years. But listen to this. To the press, Simon Pete Worden said, "The fundamental question is, are we alone? For the first time, there is an optimism that sometime in our lifetimes, we're going to get to the bottom of that. If I were a betting man, which I am, I would bet we're not alone. There is a lot of life." Wow. Now, that is a big, big statement coming from that source. Wouldn't you agree? Wouldn't you agree that whenever he says, "I would bet we're not alone," and in fact, there's a lot of life out there, that's a big statement considering who it's coming from. Now, it's pretty interesting because, you know, the Kepler mission is going to end November 2012. That's when it's slated to come to an end. But between now and then, they're going to be looking for these other Earth-like planets. Now, we've been told, and this is just a hypothetical, just speculation, we've been told by some guests on this show that there's going to be probably a very unambiguous revelation of extraterrestrials about 2012, 2013, they are going to be here unambiguously. And Kepler is going to end at the end of 2012. And they are betting they're going to find life. Sounds a little bit like fish. We'll be back in just a moment. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey. She is the state director for MUFON in Arizona. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey. She is the state director for MUFON in Arizona. Now, she's been with us before. And, Chris, it's good to have you back with us. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
Chris, a lot of people, now, I don't want us to get into any of the details of any of the emails we've been exchanging here the past few hours, but we've been talking. I made the comment that in the world of UFOs, we eat our own. And I've said that on the air before. It is true. Any organization or any person that gets successful, particularly with the investigation, research, and study of UFOs and extraterrestrials, finds itself in a hot seat. And the hot seat is, they become the target for lots of things that people who are legends in their own minds want to say about them. One of the things, and I want to, because I've gotten some of this email in the past couple of weeks, one of the things that I really would like for you to address, because you are the Arizona director, the state director for MUFON,
mm-hmm.
is MUFON on the payroll of the federal government?
No, absolutely not. And we have talked about this. I have talked to the national director about this and the international director, and I am convinced we are not.
Where do those stories come from?
Well, I think a lot of those come from people conducting their own background checks on the hierarchy, the headquarters in MUFON. And Mr. Carrion does have a military background and a background in he has intelligence background, mm-hmm. In the military, and people just assume from that he is on the government payroll, and when in fact that is not true.
Well, some of that has come up. People had questions, thankfully I've had people to call in and ask me directly about me, because I used to be international police, and mm-hmm. that means that I was I being paid by the U.S. government? Yes, I was. And am I being paid by the U.S. government now? I wish I was. I could use the money, but I'm not. And of course, they're not going to have anything at all to do with a show like this.
Anything.
But are you having trouble hearing me?
Mm-hmm. It's okay now.
All right. So the thing about it is that it's a very easy thing for people to level the accusation. Oh, well, he or she or that group is on the payroll of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard this about just about every talk show. I've heard it about several UFO organizations, MUFON included.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard it about several very famous UFO researchers and lecturers. And as far as I've been able to determine, nobody that I've run into in the field of UFOs is on the payroll of the government. But let me say this, and then we'll move on. Folks, where do you think disclosure will come from? The government's not going to officially do it. It has to come from people who have been on the inside, who have seen things, like Robert Dean, who have seen things and who have decided to speak out. And that means, were they an insider? Yes, they were. But are they speaking out? Well, yeah. Christine, Arizona is home to some rather interesting, and it has been home to some rather spectacular UFO sightings. And it I get told every time I say this that it's not the case, but it appears to me that Arizona is one of the hot spots for UFO sightings. It's not the only one, but it certainly is active. What do you think all these UFOs are interested in Arizona? Why do you think they are so interested in this area?
Well, right now, because they probably don't like the snow everywhere else. But I want to address what you just said about disclosure, because that's a very important topic these days. And getting back into government involvement, my husband was a intelligence research analyst for the federal government way back in the 1950s and 60s. And about that time, there were some UFOs flying over the White House. I'm sure you've heard about those.
That's right.
And my husband was an eyewitness to both times in the 50s and the 60s, again, when that occurred. He went public with what he saw. He was on TV and the radio and got in big trouble with President Johnson over this, and he was taken aside by one of the CIA operatives, taken outside of his building one day out on the sidewalk, and told a little bit about disclosure. And he said that disclosure will not be determined by our military or our government, that disclosure will be determined by the ETs themselves. They are the ones that, in fact, do not want disclosure at this time.
Did he explain why?
Perfectly clear.
Okay. Did he explain why?
No, he did not explain why. And I have to believe that, because when disclosure does occur, I tend to think it will be in the form of a mass landing, and that there will be no more room for denial in anybody's mind. It'll just be out there.
Well, you know, one of the things that's pretty interesting about that is, you know, we've been hearing now for a couple of years that, and I can't verify this information either, but there seems to be some credibility to it. We've been hearing about this meeting that took place at the United Nations building, February the 12th, I believe it was 2008. It could have been 2009. I'm an old guy and I forget facts like that. But anyway, what came out of this is that you had a United States naval officer who was briefing people from about 30 countries, and he was briefing them on the reality of extraterrestrials, and that there was going to be an unambiguous appearance of the UFOs or of the extraterrestrials somewhere around 2012, 2013, in that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And that we, according to that, what we got out of that meeting, we need to start acclimating the world's population to the idea that extraterrestrials are real and they're here. Okay. Now, if we put that together, I mentioned this right at the top of the show, put that together with the fact that we have the Kepler mission in space looking for other Earths. And I'm going to read again what the director... This guy is an astronomer, and he is he heads NASA's Ames Research Center. This is the top guy at Ames Research Center. His name is Simon Pete Warden, and here's what he said. The fundamental question is, are we alone? For the first time, there is an optimism that sometime in our lifetimes, we're going to get to the bottom of that. If I were a betting man, which I am, I would bet we're not alone. There's a lot of life. Okay, now, you put all that together and the fact that Kepler is going to end its mission November 2012. It would seem to me that Kepler provides NASA cover for being able to say, hey folks, guess what we found? There's life. Oh, and guess who's coming to dinner? Tomorrow. You follow what I'm saying?
Gotcha, yeah.
It just sort of seems to fit that way. But there have been some UFO sightings fairly recently that you wanted to talk with us about that you said had some real points of interest.
Yes, indeed.
All right. The floor is yours. Let's talk about them.
Okay. September 8th this year, my husband and I had just come out of the movie theater in Casa Grande, and we were looking to the east, southeast a little bit, and the clouds were the most unusual I think I have ever seen. They were boiling, they were undulating, there were clouds hanging off the main clouds. You know, I have to tell you that when I looked at them, they reminded me of teats hanging off of a cow. You know, they were just hanging down.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, like I said, boiling. And I told my husband, I said, look at those clouds. I said, there's got to be a UFO in those clouds. Has to be. And we both agreed. I mean, they were that unusual. Now, these clouds stretched all the way from South Phoenix, maybe Mesa area, all the way down to Tucson. I mean, the whole sky was just covered with these clouds. And sure enough, at that same time, down in near Tucson in Oral Valley, a gentleman was witnessing a spectacular event over Northwest Hospital, and that's off of Tangerine Road, near Oracle and Tangerine Road. And he said he was out in his truck, and as he looked north towards the hospital, he could see this mile-long craft, emerald green, coming out of the clouds. It was going in and out of the clouds, going from cloud to cloud, and as it did that, the clouds that it would disappear into would become boiling and undulating and energized. And he said what was really unique about this UFO, this long emerald green cylindrical craft, was the fact that it seemed to be contained in a glass-like or invisible sphere, and it looked like a Tesla coil. You know these Tesla lamps that you see,
mm-hmm.
if you touch it with your finger, the electric will follow your finger around?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it looked like. And so he watched this, he said, a good couple of hours. And then the final time that this cloud went into, this UFO went into the cloud, he said that the cloud formed a human face and that the mouth would turn upwards in increments and formed a smile. And he said he about passed out when he saw that. He just could not believe it. Now this man is a master's level nurse. He owns his own clinic. And he has a lot to put on the line by coming forward with this information. So I know he was not making this up. And he noted the time, and it was the same time that we had noted up in Casa Grande as being the same time that we saw the clouds appear undulating, boiling, and doing all these weird things. Yeah, 60 miles away. So
mm-hmm.
I knew he was telling the truth.
And you know, I don't know if you've ever heard the name Ed Grimsley, but
yes.
Okay, Ed Grimsley told me that he's been seeing a lot of spheres that he said they're enormous, He sees them with his night vision goggles, and he said, you know, it's very difficult to see them any other way, but with the night vision goggles, you can see them. And he said they're very large, and he said the best way that he can describe them is they look like a soap bubble. And he said they're just very, very big. And so I wonder if maybe inside of those soap bubbles, or though they're not really soap bubbles, but inside of that sphere, I wonder if there's, you know, a craft like what you're describing inside of these other spheres that are, for some reason, just not visible at the time he's looking at them.
Well, the long emerald green object that I was talking about was inside that sphere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what was I going to say? There was one other aspect to this that I wanted to tell you, and I got sidetracked here. Let me see here. I'm going over my notes. When we were interviewing this man at the La Quinta Inn down there in Tucson, there was a gentleman listening to our conversation, and he came forward and said that he was a pilot, and he was coming through Tucson near Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, and that two jets were scrambled to the vicinity where this UFO was seen. And he said, but the unusual thing about that was one of the jets was flying inverted. And I said, well, why would it be flying inverted? And the only thing we could come up with is so that he could get a better look at the craft upside down, I guess.
He was looking down at it.
Mm-hmm. My husband said he was looking down at it. And so we called Davis-Monthan. I try to follow up with the Air Force bases. I've only had luck one other time, which we'll talk about another case later, and how we managed to get the military to admit
okay.
They had these things on radio.
All right, let's do this. We have a break coming up in about 5 seconds, so let's hold up till after the break, and when we come back, we'll pick up right there at Davis-Monthan. Folks, we'll be back with Chris Dickey right after this. Back. My guest this evening on the Kevin Smith Show, Chris Dickey. She is the state director for MUFON, Arizona. Chris, you were telling us about this pilot that came over and talked to you, and he said that two jets had been scrambled from Davis-Monthan at the time of this UFO sighting. One was flying inverted. And then we kind of had to go to break. So if you want to pick up and tell us the story, we're all ears.
Well, not a lot happened on this particular case when I called the Air Force. Actually, I called and talked to a Sergeant McCluskey on the Public Affairs Office, and he would not talk about the incident, and I asked him, was there anyone on base who would talk to me? He said, no one will talk to you about this, and was very matter-of-fact about it. So I hung up, and I waited about a half hour or so and had my husband call, and, of course, he denied that anybody else had called and said he had no knowledge of the incident whatsoever. But I'm going to be talking about another case here in a little bit, and we did get verification from the military. We were kind of sneaky about it, but sometimes that works, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you told us about this because there is a huge difference in the way they are handling these kinds of incidents as compared to in the 1950s. Now, in February of 1957, there was a story that appeared in the Tucson newspaper. There had been a UFO sighting. An airplane had been scrambled. The pilot that was scrambled, his picture and name were on the front page of the paper. There was a story about it. There was a statement from Davis Monthan about it. They were very forthcoming in 1957. And now you could have a UFO land at the front gate of Davis Monthan and they would deny it's there. What do you think, why the secrecy about something that everybody knows happened?
Well, you know, I'm really surprised that a lot more people didn't see this. Now, this incident happened at 4:15 in the afternoon, and it went on for 2 hours. Now, a lot of people had to have seen this over there in the Oro Valley. I'm positive a lot of people had to have seen it, at least a few hundred. Mm-hmm. And yet nobody has come forward with this information. Heck, I could see the clouds all the way up into Casa Grande. Mm-hmm. And I knew that something unusual was taking place. You know, so why aren't people, you know, a lot of people still don't know that they can come to MUFON to report a case like this. You know, they say, oh, that's interesting, and they talk about it amongst themselves, and it never goes any further than that. So I'm urging people out there that are listening, if you see something unusual, please report it. You know, at least we can verify other people's stories, and we can get a little better idea of what's really going on out there.
And actually, they can report it online. All they have to do is go to the MUFON website, and there's a form on the site for you to report what you see.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, right. Now, was there anything else unusual about this incident?
Not about this particular incident, but there's another incident that I went on. Actually, I drove over to Fallon, Nevada, where the Fallon Top Dog Naval Air Station is.
Okay, now, before we get to that, let me ask one final question.
Sure.
The pilot that walked over to you and said, you know, this stuff about the jets being scrambled, did he see this craft in the air?
No, he did not.
Okay.
But he did know that something was going on because he was an Air Force pilot, and he knew that they were moving for something.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
All right, and so now in Fallon, Nevada.
The reason we went over to Fallon, Nevada, first of all, I want to talk a little bit about, everybody's been hearing about the Bigelow Aerospace involvement with MUFON, and I've been asked to address this a little bit. We started cooperating with Bigelow Aerospace on some of our cases as they come up, because they were hoping to learn something maybe as far as propulsion from some of these sightings. Of course, it's very hard to learn anything from just a report unless you have, of course, photos and instrument readings and all this other stuff, but mm-hmm. But we're cooperating as much as we can. And this case I went on in Nevada was one of those cases, and it was a close encounter. We did consider that a close encounter over there, and we are part of what's called the STAR team, or the SIP, which is the STAR Impact Project. STAR standing for I'm a little foggy here. We'll get back to that in a minute. But we drove over to Fallon. We had to get there quickly. I knew that from the story I had heard on the I had received an email of that we had to get over there quickly, and before anybody talked these kids out of talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually, it was over Mother's Day weekend this year. I think Mother's Day was on May 10th, and I think the incident happened on May 7th or May 8th. I'm not sure exactly what date. And we got to Fallon about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and we called the two teenagers involved. Actually, they were both over 18, so they were older teenagers. One was still in high school, graduating, and the other one had already graduated. And what they had witnessed, they were out at the Fallon Naval Air Station bombing range. There's a kind of a party area where kids go to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were out there by themselves, and they looked to the east, and they saw three boomerang-shaped craft, five lights on each. And they watched as one of the craft either crashed, they said, or landed. They weren't sure. It came down. That much they knew. But the other two craft, they decided to go up to these craft and take a look at them. Well, when they did so, the craft actually started pursuing them. And one of the craft was alongside of the truck as they were going down the road, and another one of the craft was behind them. And they accelerated. They were going 30 miles an hour, and they accelerated, and as they did so, the craft alongside matched their speed exactly. So then they crossed the major highway there in Fallon, and they went across and stopped, and they were next to a canal. And this is all important, because you'll see, as I go on with the story, there's aspects to it that are very important. And these kids were very observant, and I got to give them a lot of credit. As they turned around and faced the highway, they were on a little side street next to a canal. And this canal was adjacent to a dairy farm, lots of cows. Lots of insects going over the water of the canal. There's a lot of insects. And he said the thing that struck them, that they really noticed, was the fact that they had a large light, a million candle power spotlight. They said as when they turned it on, the area was totally absent of flying insects, like it's usually covered.
Wow.
The canal is full of insects all the time. And the animals were lots of animals there. Cows, we had goats, we had llamas, we had everything, and dogs. And there was not a peep from any of the animals. Usually, animals, of course, are very chatty, especially in a farming community. And there was not a sound coming from any of them. They were all scared.
What time was this?
This is about between 9 and 10 at night. So it was already dark. One of the UFOs then came behind the kids, behind their location, as if to be observing, and one of the UFOs came right overhead. It was about 50 feet overhead from what they told us. And then they took this million candle power light. Now, the young man was very excited about the whole thing, and he put the spotlight on this UFO. And when he did that, he put his hands and shaded the light off and on with his hands, you know, going back up and down in front of the light with his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that, the craft came down within about 20 feet overhead. Now, at this point, the young lady and the boy she got scared. She jumped in the truck, and he started to follow her lead, And the next thing they remember after this is being 10 miles down the road. And I said, now, wait a minute. Let's go back here. You know, I asked them to go back. I said, you were jumping in the truck, and then what? And they said, you know, we don't know. We don't know what happened. And it just dawned on them at that time during our interview that they had actually had some missing time because they could not remember how they got 10 miles down the road. They just were there. So that was very interesting. Now, these kids, when they got home, the young man took the lady home first, and then he went home. And as they're telling their parents this, of course, the parents are thinking, you know, kids are smoking a little bit of stuff out there or something's going on. But the kids, you know, they were excited, they were scared, they were, you know, you can imagine what was going through their heads.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, and I can't say who in this story, but somebody was connected to Fallon Naval Air Station security, and a call was put into security, and security admitted that they had, quote, they had three unspecified they had an unspecified aircraft incident was the word that they were words that they were using, and we verified that we did call. I verified it with a security officer. That's all I can say. And then
we have to, Chris. We have to step away for a break, and we'll come back in just a moment. And I have a question about the size of these craft. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're talking with Chris Dickey. She is the state director for MUFON in Arizona. Chris, the when we went away for break, I said I have a question about these craft, and I want to ask it before we get too much further into the story. Now, your witnesses had a very up-close look at this craft. It was about 20 feet mm-hmm. above them. How large did they say this craft was?
Let me get back to my notes here. I believe, let me ask my husband, do you remember how big those craft were that those kids were describing? 50? About, yeah, 50 feet across.
Okay.
About, yeah. And now these craft were, they described it as boomerang, but when they drew them for me, it looked more horseshoe shaped.
Okay.
In other words, it was curved just like a horseshoe, had two rear ends. And the neat thing about it was from a distance they looked very dark, and except for the lights. Of course, you could see the lights. They had a light in the middle on the front, a light and halfway to the back, and then a light on the end. On each of the rear ends of this craft, and the young lady made a very astute observation. She said, and they had grills on them. I said, grills? You know, what do you mean by grills? And she said, yeah, like, you know, like a toaster or a grill. You know, in other words, she was describing red heating elements,
mm-hmm.
Telling me that there's some kind of infrared back there. She noticed that and was very adamant about these rear ends being, you know, this red glowing color.
Okay,
also,
now
when they turned the light on it, the spotlight, they said that you could see through the hull of the craft. In other words, you could see through the body of it.
Uh-huh.
And she said the reason why she remembered this was because she said, usually it's very cloudy in Fallon, and she said that night it was very clear, and you could see the stars through the body of these craft.
Well, you know, one or two of the witnesses that I've seen in documentaries talking about the Phoenix Lights craft said that, you know, it was kind of looked like it kind of wavy and undulating around it.
Yes.
But that you could see through the craft.
Yes, and I have seen that before myself.
Okay, now you were able to get verification from the Air Force that these craft were in the air that night?
Right. We actually got verification from one of the security officers, and I really can't elaborate on that. So then, the next day, I called the public affairs duty officer, as I do in all my cases when there's military involved, I will call the public affairs office.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually who the first person we touch base with is. And because we had heard, because the term unspecified aircraft incident was used, and by the way, we think this is the new code word that the military is using instead of UFO now.
Mm-hmm.
Had I gone to the public affairs duty officer and asked him about a UFO incident, he would have not answered us at all. He would have denied everything. But because I went to him and I said, I understand you had an unspecified aircraft incident last night. And he said, yes, we did. And we also had, I believe he said, and this is my memory is a little faulty here, he either said one or he said three C-130s. Well, I know there was one C-130 on radar because the young lady, when she got home, a C-130 flew right over her house. And she said it was not a C-130 that they were watching. Of course, those things are very noisy. If you've ever been around a C-130 when they're flying, you know, 100 feet over your house.
Well, I've actually flown inside of them, too, and they're very noisy inside.
Right. And they're not much quieter on the outside. So, so we knew that there was C-130s out that night. So, the public affairs duty officer told me to call the air traffic control, and of course I did. He told me who to talk to was Lieutenant Commander somebody over there, and then I called and I left a message because they weren't answering their phone.
Mm-hmm.
It took them 2 weeks to get back to me, by the way.
Yeah.
But that part of the conversation is interesting in itself, and I'll get back to that in a minute. But the young lady and her boyfriend went back over to the area where they first saw the objects, and when they got there, there was military combing the whole area, and so they didn't approach any further. They turned around and left. But what the kids said is that they're looking for the down. Remember the first craft I said went down,
mm-hmm.
and either landed or it went down. They said they're looking in the wrong. They were laughing because I said they're looking in the wrong area. They were looking in the opposite direction where this UFO had come down. So evidently, it must have landed or came down. Something was going on there. We're not sure exactly what. So.
Now, have these two kids, have they, as of yet, been hypnotically regressed to see if they can recover their time?
No, I have no idea. And I've tried keeping in touch with them, and I really haven't heard from them, although I have their phone numbers, and I probably should call them
mm-hmm.
and try to make contact again, because that would be, I'm pretty convinced that there was some contact made because of the lost time and the fact that they couldn't account for almost 10 miles driving down the road. Something definite happened during that time, for sure. Now, after my husband and I got home from that trip, we finally got a call back. It was about 10 days later, we got a call back from this lieutenant commander at the air traffic control.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he was playing dumb with us. He said, what was his words? Oh, yeah, he asked me, what is an unspecified aircraft incident? And, of course, he was waiting for me to say UFO so he could, again, deny it. And I realized that he was trying to trap me, so I just said, well, it's your base, you tell me. And then he said, well, I'll get back to you on that. And, of course, it's been since May, and I've never heard from him again.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, evidently he knew that the jig was up. I knew their code words, and he couldn't respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
So...
All right, yeah. So we all need to quit using UFO. They're UAIs.
When you're dealing with the military, of course, they'll just come up with some new code words, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, you know, that was quite a case. You know? So the kids are still talking about it. I imagine that, you know, they'll never forget it. And they've since joined MUFON, and they want to become investigators, and they want to stay in the loop, you know. So, I guess I can't blame them. Well, that was pretty exciting.
Do you have, or have you had any indication as to whether the Air Force ever actually looked in the right location and found this downed UAI?
No. We've never heard anything about that. More than likely, the craft had landed under its own power and probably left again, because there's never been any mention of it.
Now, this was out in Nevada.
Right.
It also is a hot spot.
The Ballon Naval Air Station.
Yeah.
Now, what we think is going on here is that these UFO, they were running bombing targets or something out there at the bombing range that night. So I think...
I hate to do it, but a break is taking over. We'll pick up right there, Chris, when we come back, okay? We'll be back, folks, right after this.
Phoenix, Arizona. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. My guest is Christine Dickey. She is the State Director for MUFON Arizona. Christine, when we went away for break, you were about to tell us that they were doing some kind of bombing practice out at the Fallon Air Force Base.
Naval Air Station,
I'm sorry.
It seems to be that these UFOs are very interested in what our military is doing. And, their tactics and their... the aircraft, their bombs, you know, they're very interested in what's going on there. And, of course, any new developments, you know, and I don't blame them for being concerned, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so they had some sort of operation, some sort of practice going on that night?
Earlier that afternoon, I think, there was something going on out there from what I was told.
All right, now, we've got Nevada, we've got Arizona,
mm-hmm.
and back at the time of the Phoenix Lights, what has come to be known as the Phoenix Lights was seen in Nevada as well, before it was seen in Arizona. Then it was seen to fly all the way down the state. of course, the ludicrous story that they put out about, you know, it was flares over at the Barry Goldwater range. Right. Yeah, there were flares after the original sighting of the original craft. And the videos of the flares look amazingly like flares. The video of the Phoenix Lights looks like something we've never seen on this planet previously. But my question is, I'm asking the question because of something you just said. Do you think that what's happening is these UFOs are kind of concentrated around places like Nevada and Arizona because of the tremendous amount of aerial activity in terms of, you know, testing bombs, lots of military flights, things like that? Do you think that's what is attracting them to the area?
Absolutely. You bet I do. A lot of UFOs have been spotted around some of the old missile silos. We've heard in the past that the missiles themselves have even been shut down by these UFOs. From time to time you hear stories about that. They're very concerned about our weapons, especially any weapons that can end up in space.
Speaking of weapons ending up in space, brand new story just hit the news today. The Indian Space Research Organization, which is their version of NASA, has begun development of lasers and an exo-atmospheric kill vehicle that can be combined to produce a weapon to destroy enemy satellites in orbit. My, space is becoming quite a friendly neighborhood, isn't it?
Well, it's becoming quite scary because sooner or later, I believe that these extraterrestrials will take matters into their own hands and put a stop to the shenanigans.
Yeah, you know, and there are a number of scenarios by which they may decide to do that. One scenario that isn't too far-fetched is with several space agencies on the planet now. You know, there used to be NASA and the Russians. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have the Japanese, you have the Chinese, you have the European Space Agency, you have the Indians. Iran says that they are going to get into the space race. They are actually going to launch a satellite, I forget when, I think in a couple of years. And so, with everybody jumping into this space race, one scenario is that some nut somewhere decides to fire on an extraterrestrial vehicle in space, and they get a lucky hit, and it's on. That would not be fun.
Well, actually, they've already fired on extraterrestrial vehicles. I mean, this is not anything new.
We have fired upon the smaller craft that come into Earth's atmosphere.
Right.
But out in space, we've been told and we've seen photographs and videos of what appear to be very large, we would call them motherships, that are out there. And if you hit one of those, I'm not real sure they would be really understanding about it.
Probably not. And I expect that before that will happen, I think they will try and neutralize some of these weapons. You know, just recently, you know, I think we talked about this on the last time I was on your show. In September of 2008, I was out in the yard taking photos. I had just learned a new trick about taking UFO photos, and I thought I'd try it, and actually got, during a thunderstorm, got an object that it was very hard to tell what it was. It looked like it was a round orb of some kind. And when we applied a photo filter to this round orb, it was apparent that it was a UFO and that this UFO had windows around it.
Mm-hmm.
And
as a matter of fact, you sent that photograph to me.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
And the people up in Phoenix that were going to enlarge this photo and see if they could see what was behind the windows, and I thought, well, I can do this, you know, I can enlarge it and see what's in there. And so I took the middle window and I tried and I tried and I tried to enlarge it, and I couldn't get anything to show. So about 12:30 at night, I went to bed, and I'm telling you, this guy came to me and was telling me in my sleep how to enlarge this so that I could see his face behind the window. I jumped up at 2:30 in the morning and I told my husband, I know how to do it. I jumped, got on my computer, and in 10 minutes, I had a face.
Wow.
I haven't been able to do it since, but I still have that face in my computer, and he is obviously a pilot. He has what looks like a semi-transparent oxygen mask on. You can actually see through this thing somewhat. There is a microphone on the right side of his mouth. Actually, the left side of the picture, right side of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
He has long blonde hair. He also had a hat on. He had a mustache and a beard. And it's very hard to clearly see this. Now, don't forget, we're looking through a very dark, dark window, probably a half mile or mile away, maybe probably closer to a mile. I don't know how we ever got this face out of this thing. It was a miracle, in my estimation. He had a hat on. If you look in Zechariah Sitchin's books of the Anunnaki, they have a hat on, which is like, it got a wide brim with a notch in the middle, and the flaps of the brim of the hats are usually rolled up in these pictures, or they're folded up straight up, and but they do match the hats worn by the Anunnaki in Zechariah Sitchin's books. I have to tell you, I know that's what we have there, is probably the first photo of an extraterrestrial, and yet people are not paying hardly any attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
I've put it out there, and, you know, people just don't get it, and, you know.
Well,
I wrote a book, you know, I put it in the book, it's there. I even provide a drawing of what you're looking at so that it becomes more clear.
Well, you know, Christine, it's just for some reason the nature of humans that now every time I say this, I open the door to all kinds of criticism. but here we go. It's just the nature of humans that we prefer to believe rather than to know. And as proof that our beliefs can be so dead wrong, just, folks, ask yourself, are there people on the planet right now who still do not, quote, believe that the Holocaust took place? Yes, there are people who do not believe the Holocaust took place. And yet, we have photographs of it. We have documents of it. We know for sure it happened. And Allied forces had to help bury some of the bodies when this thing was over, because, the Germans, let me rephrase that, the Nazis, not the Germans, the Nazis in Germany, when they left the camps, there were still lots of bodies stacked up that they had not buried or burned. So there's no question, we know the Holocaust took place, and yet there are people who say they don't believe it took place. And that's, in my opinion, The Holocaust and UFOs are not related, I don't think. And I am not trying to relate that. But that condition of believing what we want to believe applies to everything. And so what happens with UFOs, we have miles of film footage and videotape showing UFOs. And a lot of this stuff is film footage from the military. It's film footage from NASA. We have, it's not just a guy named Kevin Smith on the ground that shot a picture of something in the air. We're talking about the best cameras, the best trained, qualified people when it comes to aerial phenomena, and they've shot this video and film. And we still have people saying, well, I don't know if I really believe in it or not. Well, that's why, Chris, pardon me while I'm on my soapbox. I'll let you talk in a minute. Folks, that's why I say the stupidest question you could possibly ask me is, do you believe in UFOs? That's like asking me, do I believe in oxygen? Do I believe in you've heard me say it, in doorknobs? There's nothing to believe. Either they exist or they don't, and if there's forensic, hard evidence that they exist, then they exist. There's nothing to believe. Well, the forensic evidence is mountains high, and it's foolish to even ask the question, do you believe in UFOs? But that's what you're running up against, Chris, with your photo. You're running up against this condition of humanity that prefers to be a mushroom. That's what you're running up against. Tell you what I want to do. I want to open up the telephone lines and let folks who would like to call in. Now, if you have a question about anything that Christine has said, if you have a comment about anything she said, or maybe you have had some contact or you've seen a UFO and you've just never told anybody before, well, now is the time, because here we have the state director for Arizona, state director of MUFON, and certainly this is the kind of person you would want to tell it to. Okay, the telephone numbers are 623-444-5889 or toll free at 888-223-4599. All right, let me give them to you again. The main number is 623-444-5889. The toll free number, 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA or Canada, use the main number to call us, 623-444-5889. Or if you're outside the USA or Canada, then you can use the flash message link on my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and just scroll down. You'll see the link that says flash message. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Kevin. Hello there, Christine.
Hi.
Hi, yes, How possible is it that a lot of the sauces, at least nowadays, are actually later versions of Project Paperclip technology, and that nowadays it's a little bit tough to tell the real UFOs from our UFOs?
Oh, okay. Are you waiting for an answer from me on this?
Yeah.
Yeah. He wants to know how possible is that.
It's actually very difficult sometimes to tell, the difference between ours and theirs. Although, and I've seen what I know to be ours. When I lived down in Tucson, we started noticing an object coming in at night over a several-month period. It would start about 10 o'clock at night, and every 10 minutes, you'd see this huge orb come in from California and without turning around, go straight back. It would come in and go back. every 10 minutes. And this was not a typical aircraft by any means. It was, and this type of light, now I know that the ETs fly around these things because I've had one of them land in front of me on a road on Highway 80 in Wyoming. So I do know that they have the same type of craft. A lot of these triangular craft that you hear about, I do know that they are, some of those are German developed. The Germans have those type of craft in their possession. I have a picture of one in my book on the ground with people around it. So.
Now, Christine, when you say German developed, you mean Nazi developed?
No, not necessarily Nazi. Although all I know is that these are pretty recent photos.
Oh, okay.
These are not the old World War II photos. These
okay.
are recent photos, and they're large. How many feet across would you say that thing is? Well, my husband says 100 feet across. At the widest part.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with these things now, you know how our power structures are on this planet nowadays. Like the way that we treat our own fellow human beings, at least the leaders of this planet. Do you see some sort of propaganda or some sort of false light type of thing happening where beings are going to make their big appearance, that something that our governments are going to pull some sort of false flag and turn the people against the aliens?
Well, that has been predicted by Wernher von Braun and, of course, Dr. Carol Rosen, who used to work with him. He said that would be one of the scenarios towards the end, that the government or the governments of the Earth would pull, that they would try to make people afraid of making contact with the extraterrestrials.
All right, Kevin, thanks for the call. The telephone line is open, folks, 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. I have a flash message here from Peter in Columbia. And Peter says, this is a question for Christine. And then in parentheses, he says, I assume she is the Tuesday guest, even though it says Monday above it. Peter, this is Monday. At least it is in Phoenix, Arizona. but the question is, can you please share the details of abduction cases that you're working on?
Abduction cases? I don't have any current abduction cases that we're working on.
Okay. Do you know of any fairly recent abduction cases?
Well, abduction as far, kids that I just talked about, and that was an abduction. I'm sure that there was at least an hour or more lost time there, and
Mm-hmm. But you don't have any details on that yet.
No, and I've had my own, I wouldn't call it abduction, I've had a contact.
Uh-huh.
I definitely would not say abduction because I was a very willing participant in what happened during that, so.
All right. Let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Hi, Christine. So, because there are aliens and then some governments have some of the same craft, how can we tell the difference then? If I have never seen a UFO, how am I going to tell the difference?
Well, generally, if it's government, they're not going to land and make contact.
Oh, okay.
If you're dealing with extraterrestrials and it's a close encounter situation, you know it's not our government. I mean, they're not going to want to make contact. The last thing they're going to want to do is for you to know it's the government.
So you don't think? Seems like on this show, Kevin, you've had some people that have talked about, you know, that maybe they have replicated some of the alien as maybe a, I don't know what I want to say, a robot. That's the closest I can come. I mean, how would you know the difference there too? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Between
maybe they duplicated some of the alien, you know, the look.
Well,
in themselves.
Yeah, I understand what you're talking about. Like with the grays, that maybe they are kind of, some of them are sort of biological robots created by us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that you'll ever really be able to tell the difference. But, you know, you just got to kind of figure that the real aliens out there maybe would not be too thrilled about impersonating someone impersonating them. Kind of like, you know, it's illegal to impersonate the FBI, it's illegal to impersonate a police officer, and they're really sticky about that when they find someone who is impersonating. And I would suspect that the aliens would maybe be a little sticky about that themselves. Rusty, thanks for the call. And we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back. More with Christine Dickey after this and your phone calls. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey. She is the state director for MUFON Arizona. And telephone lines are open. The telephone number, the main number, 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, if you don't have one of those calling plans where you can call me without it costing you anything, you need to call me on the toll-free line. The number is 888-223-4599. And, of course, if you're outside of the USA, you're outside of Canada, you can either call me on the main number, 623-444-5889, or you, and that'll work anywhere in the world, or you can call me, I'm sorry, you can send me a flash message. Now, the flash message is easy to do. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down. You'll see the link that says flash message. Chris, we have a flash message from Blue in Australia. It says, good day, Mr. Smith and Miss Christine Dickey. Great show. And he's got two questions. The first one is, what do you think of the disclosure doors being open to the greater public in the next few years? So we'll take that one first. What do you think, Chris?
Well, a friend of mine who has done a lot of research on this crop circle phenomenon, and also he took that one step further, and he started getting into Bible codes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know much about Bible codes.
Yes, I do.
He has done some research with Bible codes and says, according to his research now, and that there are supposed to be major landings in the Middle East starting, I believe, with this March, yeah, this year. So we'll see what develops there, but I think it's going to be fairly soon.
All right. Second question: do you think the extraterrestrials are friendly or hostile?
Well, from all indications are the ones that I have dealt with are definitely not hostile. If there are hostile ones, and I mean that's always a possibility, I'm not aware of them.
You know, I think that there's no reason to think that extraterrestrials would be a great deal different from us, in that
right.
there are some that may be friendlies and some that may be hostiles.
Yeah.
Certainly you're not dealing with just one species or race of extraterrestrials. We've heard about greys. We've heard about the Nordics. We've heard about tall whites. We've heard about reptilians and a whole bunch of different types of extraterrestrials that we've heard about, you know, that people have had contact with or that they have seen. Well, each of those groups may have their own agenda and probably do have their own agenda. And for some of those groups, that agenda may be a peaceful, non-hostile agenda, and for some of them, it may be an agenda that we would interpret as hostile. For me, if you take me out of where I am, and I don't want you to, that's a hostile act. Now, other people might not interpret it that way. I do. Anyone who tries to make me do what I don't want to do is, well, not anyone. There are circumstances where, you know, like if you're at work and your boss tells you to do something you don't want to do, that's not necessarily hostile. But if you kidnap me, and that's the way I interpret it, you take me from where I am and I don't want you to, that's kidnapping, and for me that's a hostile act. And certainly, if the abduction stories have any credibility, and I think they do, many of them do, then I would consider that to be a hostile act. Now, let me ask you this, Chris. What do you think? Do you think that these abductions, since that's what the... I've said that would be, I think many people would interpret that as hostile. Do you think the abductions are being done with the consent of our government?
Well, according to what I've read in the past, and of course the Eisenhower, Muroc Air Force Base or Edwards, when he met with the extraterrestrials also at White Sands. They certainly know about this, at least in some instances they do. I believe they do.
Yeah, but do you think they are consenting to it or simply can't control it?
At this point, it sounds like they really have no control over it.
Okay.
I mean, it's just my guess, but I would have to say that they have no control over it.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that the extraterrestrial groups that are doing these abductions view these as a hostile act?
Do they view it as a hostile act?
Yeah.
Probably not. I mean, if... I don't think they view it at all as a hostile act. They probably are doing what we simply do with animals when we go out and we take samples. So when we go out and we tag an animal out in the African wild and we do blood tests on it or whatever we do with it. I mean, they're probably, I would have to say, doing a scientific research, possibly.
All right, now you mentioned earlier that you had some personal experience with extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, in 1981, I had left my husband. We had been separated for a while, and I went up to Wyoming. I lived in Colorado at the time, and I went up to Wyoming, and I met him earlier at one of Leo Sprinkle's conferences when he put on the Rocky Mountain UFO conferences in the early 80s. And I went to work with Pat McGuire, this gentleman, and he had a ranch in near Laramie, a 5,000 acre ranch, and he started having cattle mutilated. And he, of course, went to the sheriff, and he went to the university. He was convinced that it was university students from the University of Wyoming at Laramie. So one night he and his brother decided to wait out at one of the mesas where the cattle were being abducted from. And he actually saw a UFO come down, put a blue beam of light on one of the cows and draw it up, this blue beam of light. And of course they were so scared they just ran all the way back to the house. He couldn't even put the key in to the ignition to drive the truck back. And then from then on he started seeing these UFOs would land during the daytime. They came out and started making contact with him, and they were people just pretty much like us. He said they looked just as human as you and I. And so by the time I had gotten there, this is a couple years later, and we were working together, we had driven up to Buffalo, Wyoming, came back down, picked up a load of fireworks, and we were headed from Rawlins to Laramie on Highway 80. And we must have been, it was about 11 o'clock at night when we left Rawlins, and about 11:30, there, straight ahead of us to the east, were these three really bright objects in the sky. I mean, they were really brighter than Venus. And I remember saying to him, I said, Pat, I said, look at those stars. And I no sooner said that, the middle one was on top of us. I mean, it went from way up in the sky, and it was just down over our truck. And of course, I screamed. I thought it was going to ram us. And then as soon as I screamed, it stopped in midair, and it started descending to the pavement very slowly, very gently. And by then, we had already pulled off the highway, expecting a collision with this thing. And it landed on the road in front of us, and I started getting out of the truck. I was actually going to stand in front of our truck and wait for them. I knew they were going to come up to us. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind that they intended contact. Mm-hmm. And then Pat discouraged me from doing that and said, wait till you're invited. And I said, well, isn't this an invitation? We watched as the Air Force, jet out of Warren Air Force Base in Cheyenne was dispatched, and it chased one of the objects to the south of our position. Oh, wait a minute. Excuse me. That would be to the north of our position. And all of a sudden, it looked as if the jet had just stopped in midair. Well, what had happened was the object took off so fast, it made the jet look as if it had stopped. And then there was another object to the south of us, which was skimming the mountains and the hills, keeping equidistant from the ground at all times. And then after a while, now we thought we were there about 5 minutes, but when we got back to Laramie, I mean, all of a sudden this object now sitting in front of us had just vanished. It didn't raise up in the air and take off. It just was sitting in front of us, and then boom, not there anymore, just that quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt very disappointed at that point, because I didn't think anything had happened, and I was really hoping something would. But when we got back to Laramie, it was about 3:30 in the morning, which means it should have only taken an hour and a half. We should have been back to Laramie at 12:30, and here it was 3:30 in the morning. So there was 2 to 3 hours, good 2 to 3 hours of missing time.
Now, did you ever...
Pat remembered going inside of this UFO, and I could not remember. He said we both went inside. I couldn't remember. I still can't remember.
Well, okay, that answers the question. I was going to ask you if you've ever been regressed.
I have.
And you can't remember even that way?
No, but I started having flashbacks of bits and pieces of conversation would come back and what they look like, and they were very human. I would have to say they probably looked like the blonde, the Nordics that you've heard about.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very concerned about me, and I remember saying to one of them, "Don't worry, everything will be all right."
Okay, Chris, we have to step away for the break, and we'll pick up right there with your conversation with this extraterrestrial when we come back. My guest this evening, Christine Dickey. We are on Final Approach, and that means we only have a few minutes left in the show. So if you plan to call, the time to do it is right now, 623-444-5889, or toll free, 888-223-4599. And, Chris, when we went away for break, you were telling us about your experience, your contact with this ET, and you had said to one of them, "Don't worry, everything will be all right."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the floor is yours.
Well, like I said, I don't remember afterwards why I said that. I have an idea why I said that, and it's kind of a personal one, but mm-hmm. the fact that I was starting to remember what they looked like, again, I would have to guess that I was at least dealing with the Anunnaki at that time. And, of course, we know that Nibiru is supposed to be visible from the southern hemisphere at this time, and that in a few years, Nibiru is supposed to be visible with the naked eye from the northern hemisphere as well. So I can only assume from my experience that that's who I was dealing with at the time.
All right. Now, you said you brought up something that you may or may not know the answer to this question, but you brought up something that would be of high interest to our audience, and that is Nibiru,
yes.
Supposed to be visible from the southern hemisphere at this time. Do you have any idea if, in fact, it is visible?
Well, I have a friend who has contact with aspects of our government who don't want to be named, and I trust in her, the information that she gives me. And yes, it can be, Nibiru can be seen right now from the southern hemisphere, and there are, in fact, I believe there are photos of it on the internet available. It is a planet with a pink, kind of a pinkish halo around it.
You know, I've seen some of those photographs, and mm-hmm. here's what I wonder. We see those, we hear people say, "There it is, it's visible." And then we see scientists, astronomers on television saying, "This is fiction, it's not real, you know, if this planet is out there, why are no astronomers seeing it?" And so kind of balance that for us. Well, you think these astronomers are uninformed? Are you, the ones that are on TV saying that, are they uninformed? Or are they lying?
Well, don't forget, I said that this is only visible from the extreme southern hemisphere around Antarctica.
Okay.
You don't have that many astronomers down that way, but I expect as it co- comes up higher in the in their orbit, we will certainly have more astronomers viewing it at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So
now,
go
ahead.
I believe it. I believe that it is visible.
All right, let's take this telephone call. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. My name is Mark from New York, and just a comment on Nibiru.
Okay.
To me, it doesn't seem like it would matter if Nibiru was close to Earth or if it was out on its furthest point on its 3,600-year trek, you know, through the solar system. That based on Christine's description of the technology that these visitors possess, that mm-hmm. They would need to have Nibiru near Earth in order to get here. I think that they're more than capable of moving around our solar system quite freely. And secondly, the other thing that interests me is the fact that we concentrate so much on Mars and, you know, the possibility of, you know, the moon being hollow or having ancient structures on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And there are icy moons of Jupiter, for example, which I'm sure you're aware of,
mm-hmm.
that, for example, these photographs of the Andes lakes where there are some type of, looks like some type of machinery or plants or chemical plants or structures that are underwater.
Yeah.
It's very possible that, you know, these visitors are very close neighbors, and they're actually in our solar system, and they're not traveling here from long distances, although I don't doubt that there are others that are traveling from long distances. I just say that we tend to believe that you know, that this is other than the Earth or Earth, that this solar system is otherwise dead. And
well, I think you're exactly right. I think you know, I've taken a look at some photographs of Venus where you can very clearly see buildings on Venus. And that's in my e-book about that. And I think if they can build something on the bottom of a lake in the Andes, they certainly can build something in the ocean that's under the ice on Europa, or I think the other one is Io, where they say there's a liquid ocean. Certainly, you know, if you can build it under the water on one planet, you can build it under the water on another planet. And
yeah.
Or, in this case, a moon of one of our planets. So I think you're right. I think there's probably some very near visitors.
And one final thought, and I'll get out of your way here, but...
Now you have to make it quick, because we're almost out of show.
Well, I'll do this real quick. The fact that there's just such dramatic overpopulation on this planet, and the fact that you know, we can't sustain the population... that may be the reason why our friends may be interested in helping us to get through this situation that's coming very rapidly. And with that, have a nice evening.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Interesting comments, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very.
Chris, how do people join MUFON?
Okay, just go on the search engine and type in MUFON, and it'll come up with the MUFON site, and click on the Join MUFON and go from there. We're also looking for good investigators all the time, so if anybody's interested in doing that, send for the manual on the same site and think about joining us.
All right. And if you are interested in MUFON Arizona, all you have to do is click on Christine's picture on my website, and it will take you to the page that is
great.
About MUFON Arizona. Chris, thank you for being with us this evening.
You bet.
And if you will, just
for
stay
having
on. Well, you're certainly welcome. And if you will, just stay on the line with me for the next few minutes here as I bring this edition of the Kevin Smith Show to a close. I'd like to chat with you for just a minute after the show. Folks, that's going to be it, a wrap for this evening. And, you know, I appreciate the work that MUFON does. There are also other organizations out there engaged in similar activity and doing good work, and I appreciate their work. I appreciate the work done by anyone who gives it a real professional shot, you know, to go out and investigate UFOs and abduction cases and et cetera. I don't know of anyone that's getting rich off of the UFO investigation field, and so I appreciate the work that these folks do. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.